This evening, your host will be Dr. Kia Lewis. She's standing by, all ready and rearing to go. And as per the usual, she has some guests for you. And without further ado, let's go right over to the good doctor and say a very good evening to Dr. Lewis.
Hi, good evening, Bryson. How are you?
Yes, ma'am. I'm not too bad. And you yourself?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good. It's always good to be here on Better Health this evening. As always, I want to wish a very warm welcome to all of our listeners. This is a show which is aimed at raising public awareness of common health issues that affect all of us. So it's my pleasure to be your host this evening. And we are looking forward to a really good session, a very interesting topic. I myself have a special interest in this topic, and I'm sure when we talk about it, you will understand what we are saying. Now, I want to remind you, Better Health is not the same without you. We want to encourage your interaction. And so please be reminded that you can reach us. You can call into the station at 434-1790 with your questions or comments. That's 434-1790. Or if you prefer to send a WhatsApp message, you're a little bit technology savvy, you can send your messages to 266-4862. Again, that number is 266-4862. Now, we have two very special guests with us this evening. We are going to be talking about the topic of diabetes reversal. We know that this month is Diabetes Awareness Month. Last week, Monday, the 14th of November, we would have celebrated Diabetes Awareness Day. And even though I'm aware we had a program, we were privileged to have a program a couple weeks ago with Dr. Brandenson and Dr. Goddard, where we would have gone over the bread and butter of diabetes, I thought we can't go through this month unless we have another discussion on it. It's such a relevant topic. We know that worldwide, the statistics are going up. And even in Barbados, diabetes continues to be a serious problem for us. In fact, about 1 in 5 persons in our population are diagnosed with diabetes. And as we approach over the age of 65, that can go up to almost half of persons over the age of 65 having a diagnosis of diabetes. So we can see we can never talk about this topic enough. So for those of you who might have missed our discussion on the bread and butter of diabetes, the basics, please feel free to go back and listen to the podcast. But this evening, we're going to give you a basic background, and then we're going to delve right into the topic of diabetes reversal. Can it be reversed? That's the question on my mind and a question on everybody's mind this evening. And we're going to have two guests to discuss that. But let me take the opportunity to welcome Dr. Karen Bino. Dr. Bino, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lewis.
Yes, thank you so much for being with us. And I also want to welcome warmly Ms. Stacia Whitaker, who's a registered dietitian. Welcome to the program, Ms. Whitaker.
Good evening, Kia. Good evening, listeners. I'm happy to be here.
Good. Good to see you both. So let me tell you a little bit about our guest before we delve into it. So Dr. Karen Bino is a general practitioner. She has over 16 years of experience in patient-centered family practice. I like that, patient-centered practice, research, and sports medicine. She has been the lead physician at the Bridge Medical Center for the last 13 years, and she was the co-researcher and project physician, project manager of the Barbados Diabetes Reversal or Remission Study, a critical breakthrough research study into the practical management of type 2 diabetes in the region. And this resulted in an international publication in 2019. Dr. Bino's involvement in medical research has also led to a few international publications. She's actively involved in sports medicine and enjoys teaching, hiking, traveling. She is a proud graduate of the University of the West Indies, a great university, if I must say so myself, no bias. Now, Ms. Stacia Whitaker is a registered dietitian, nutritionist with a master's in public health and a certificate in adult weight management. She's worked for several years with the Ministry of Health, the HIV Food Bank, but she currently works with the St. Michael Geriatric District Hospital, and she provides food and nutrition services, including medical nutrition therapy for the residents. Ms. Whitaker holds membership in several nutrition associations, as well as a coalition, both locally and abroad. She volunteers her time with the Community Education, Empowerment and Development Program, where she teaches basic cooking classes to low-income and special needs community members. Overall, she enjoys planning community nutrition programs that are geared towards improving the health of all Barbadians and is dedicated to helping people of all ages take control of their health. Again, a warm welcome to you, our guests. Now, I want to start the ball rolling. I want to start with Dr. Bino. I know we said that we had a program not too long ago about the bread and butter, the basics of diabetes, but we can't start a discussion like this unless we discuss what diabetes really is. So Dr. Bino, can you let our listeners know a basic definition of diabetes?
Well, good night to everyone. Good night, listeners. Good night, Barbados. Good night. Thank you very much. I just want to say thanks very much to Dr. Lewis for inviting me on this program. Diabetes is a condition in which your body fails to adequately break down glucose for a number of reasons. And the main reasons in type 2 diabetes is because the organs which are involved in that process, mainly the liver and the pancreas, are not functioning well, and therefore they fail to recognize insulin, which is the hormone that really breaks down the glucose and allows our cells to use it and adequately provide energy throughout the body. So because this process is flawed, so to speak, it results in high glucose levels circulating within the bloodstream. And so all the effects of that are seen in various ways in the body, in a nutshell. And therefore, you would present with the different symptoms and signs of diabetes and the ensuing complications.
Right. So that's a very good and basic definition. And I know in Beijing parlance, we tell people you're too sweet. But as a population, we really are too sweet. Isn't that so, Dr. Bino? We really are too sweet, right?
Yes.
So we're having a number of problems associated with this quote-unquote sweetness. Can you tell us about some of the complications associated with diabetes?
Sure. So the complications are really throughout the entire body, if you think of it from head to toe. So you can get complications involving your blood vessels that actually supply the brain. Persons are at higher risk for strokes, also for heart attacks, cardiovascular disease. If you go back up to the head, actually your eyes. So you can get conditions that affect the back of the eyes, the retina, etc., and can lead to blindness as well. You can get kidney complications, renal kidney failure. You can also have, because the vessels are also affected that supply the nerves, you can get neuropathy, diabetic neuropathy. So you can get nephropathy and neuropathy, so kidney and nerve disease. And these complications can lead to what people most commonly know about in terms of infection in the bloodstream, because your white cells that fight infection actually don't function properly. So because of that, your ability to fight off infections generally as a diabetic is actually flawed. So therefore, you're more prone to general infections. And a lot of people know about bacterial infections because you lose feeling in your feet and so forth. So a wide spectrum of complications can result.
Right. So when we're talking about complications, you're talking about things like the amputations. You know, we hear a lot about that. And we talked about the kidney issues. So people end up on dialysis. So we've heard a lot about that. And then the cardiovascular things, your heart attacks and so forth. So we do have, like you said, a wide spectrum of complications. Now, I think the reason that we are having this discussion this evening is because we know that most of the time when patients come and we give them a diagnosis of diabetes, it is a life-changing diagnosis. And usually we say, okay, well, you're going to have to go on medication. You will need to be on this medication for the rest of your life. And I've had quite a few patients who are not happy about that. And they will say, doc, is there anything I can do to get rid of this diabetes? Is there anything I can do to get off the medication? Things like that. And so my question to you then, Dr. Bino, would be, when we talk about diabetes reversal, what are we really talking about? Is it possible to reverse diabetes?
Well, so when we speak about diabetes reversal, actually the term that is more commonly used now, or the more appropriate term, is actually diabetes remission. Because what we're essentially doing is attempting to make changes in the body's function that will result in having a normal blood sugar level. And so the whole reversal process is based on losing weight and resumption of the normal function of the pancreas and the liver that we mentioned before. So the whole aim is to really get your blood glucose levels, blood sugar levels, back to normal levels. And that's where diabetes remission comes into play. Because if you lose the weight, so the principle of it is actually to lose the weight, which results in losing fat that surrounds the organs, which is basically choking the organs and affecting their primary function in reducing or controlling blood sugar levels. So once the weight is lost and the fat is reduced, the organs can function and return the glucose levels to normal, because the insulin levels are higher and the insulin is being more effective at doing its job. But remission versus reversal, remission means it could come back, meaning that if you regain the weight that you've lost, essentially your blood sugar levels can go back up to the diabetes level, or you can return to a diabetic state. And if I could mention some numbers, I think that would be good. The World Health or WHO criteria for diagnosing diabetes, basically the numbers would be a blood glucose level of 7 or more millimoles per liter, or a HbA1c of 6.5 or greater. So the HbA1c is a test that is done in doctors' offices or laboratories that actually measures, let's say, your average glucose or blood sugar readings over the last 3 months. So it will give us an idea of, you know, if it was 7 on average, 8, 9 on average over the past 3 months. So if you're able to achieve diabetes remission and your numbers come below or within the normal range, then you've accomplished your task. However, if you have gained or regained weight and your numbers come above those targets, then you're back to having diabetes again.
And that makes perfect sense. One of the things that you would have pointed out is when you talked about reduction of fat around the organs, a lot of us are walking around, we are skinny on the outside but obese on the inside, right? Because you can't see the fat around the organs. Although the fat around the waist might be a good indication that you have a lot of fat around the organs, there are persons who are slimmer, who have a slimmer build, but really and truly, if you looked at their metabolic profile, and if you were able to look inside, they really have the health of an obese person. So I think that's an excellent point for persons to know when we talk about fat loss. We're not just talking about on the outside to look trim and jump for crop over, but we are talking about that fat around the organs that's causing problems. So I want to ask then, what has the international research shown in this area? Because we're talking about getting people basically off their medications and managing their diabetes just on diet and exercise alone. What has the international research been showing in the area of diabetes reversal or remission? Let's call it remission for the rest of the program.
Well, Sure. So diabetes remission can be achieved in a number of ways. So for example, what most people know about would be through the diet and exercise, weight loss through diet and exercise. There are other ways in which, of course, you can lose significant amounts of weight. And those include bariatric surgery also a different type of diet, just called a low carb diet. So the history of the actual Barbados study is that it is based out of a study that was originally done in Newcastle in 2011 by Professor Roy Taylor. And he subsequently introduced a further study in England, in the UK, where that was implemented within the national healthcare system. And out of that study, then there was a follow-up study called the DIRECT study. And even prior to that, there were a number of international studies that showed, yes, weight loss can have an effect on not only diabetes, but in terms of your general health, hypertension, lowering your cholesterol, overall better wellness, feeling better, and so forth. So that 2011 Newcastle study was a very small cohort of patients in which a very low calorie diet was introduced that allowed them to lose about 15 kilograms on average per person. So that's about just about 35 pounds or so. And that showed that their glucose levels actually normalized within an 8-week period. In addition to that, the DIRECT study followed on to the Newcastle study, and they also had similar results in terms of diabetes remission. However, they wanted to translate it into a different population. So whereas in the UK, it was mainly a Caucasian population, there was some interest from actually, the study was funded with a grant from Virgin Unite through Sir Richard Branson. And so there was some actual interest because, as you know, he resides in the Caribbean. So they wondered, you know, like in terms of helping Caribbean people because of the high prevalence of diabetes, particularly in Barbados, where just under 20% of people over the age of 25 are diabetic and over 33% of people are actually obese. So there were more national in the UK. So there's definite evidence to show, you know, this thing worked, but would it work here? Would it work with us? Would it work within our culture? Would it be appropriate? Would it be accepted? You know,
Dr. Bino? All right, so we're having some audio challenges with Dr. Bino.
Yeah, I think she's frozen a bit there, huh? Yes, she might be back with us.
Yes, Dr. Bino.
Hi, yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, yes. I'm not sure what you missed.
I think we were pretty close up. You were talking how it worked well in the UK, but the question was, would it work well here? And would it be well accepted here?
Yes. So,
right. That's where we were.
Right. So that was the whole point of bringing the study, bringing the research to the Caribbean. So in fact, we did have actually Richard Branson came and he visited along with Professor Taylor, who he would have been the main.
Dr. Bainey, your mic.
Yeah, you've muted yourself for some reason or the other.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Okay, this is partially to do with some weather issues I may be having going on here.
That's
lots of heavy rain. Sorry.
Yes. So I was saying that these guys came from the UK basically, and essentially gave us some pretty good guidance in terms of how to get started, and shared a lot of the information and the research and the resources that they had with us in order to have a successful research study.
So what I am very, very keen for our listeners to find out in terms of the study, so we understand the rationale behind the study, I'm very keen for them just to understand what was done. So I want you to describe, not in any great detail, but what did participants do, and what were the results of their actions during the time period that they were involved in this research in Barbados?
Sure, sure. There were 25 persons. There were 10 men and 15 women who were recruited into this study, having had diabetes for 6 years or less, and they had to be on strictly oral medication and not insulin. So they were brought into the program, and at the beginning of the program, we did some basic testing because we wanted to find out what their fasting blood sugars were, the HbA1c, insulin levels, and so forth. And then they went into 8 weeks of being on a low-calorie diet. So basically less than 1,000 calories per day. They used 4 Glucerna shakes, which was about 760 calories, along with 3 portions of non-starchy vegetables per day, 2 to 3 liters of water. And they were not allowed to have any meats, any starchy vegetables, so like no peas, no beans, no legumes. You couldn't use potatoes, no juices, no soft drinks, of course, and so forth. So your only drink of choice would have been, say, blackened coffee, unsweetened coffee. You could use sweeteners as well, but for the most part, it was strictly the shakes and the non-starchy vegetables. They were also provided with recipes, a recipe book, so that they would have creative ways of making their vegetables for that period of time. So that was done for 8 weeks. And after that, they were actually asked to transition over another 3 weeks back to normal diet. So going back to the 8 weeks, what I'm sure you're keen on hearing what actually happened or what the results were.
Yes.
So we had 25% of persons actually achieving diabetes remission. So we had 25% of those persons within the first 8 weeks having blood sugar levels come down to less than 7. And they also had a 0.9% reduction in their HbA1c level. Additionally, for those who didn't get to below 7, which means to non-diabetic glucose levels, they did have a significant reduction in their glucose levels. The average weight loss was 10 kilograms. So some people lost more, of course, some people lost less. But even with the average, with a less than 15 kilogram weight loss, which was the expected weight loss, we still saw remarkable results. So participants lost about 5 pounds. They were expected to lose about 5 pounds per week. That wasn't achieved every single week, but certainly by the end of the 8 weeks, most people were on target. Sorry. So what we did at the end of that period was do retest and compare to what we found at the beginning. And what we did find was that in those persons, they had a much better insulin response. So the persons who actually responded to the low-calorie diet, we say responded meaning that, you know, their glucose levels came down to normal. Those persons actually regained much better pancreatic function and more efficient insulin secretion in order to lower their glucose.
So the organs were actually working better.
Yes, the organs were actually functioning better. And they felt better, they were moving better, they had started exercising, there were no serious effects from the diet. All of those persons would have stopped their diabetes medication at the beginning of that 8-week period. So all of these, the figures I was quoting was after those persons, with those persons off of medication.
Without medication. Our listeners to know, without medication.
So at the beginning of the study, everyone was asked to actually stop all of their diabetes medication. But they were asked to continue on their hypertension medication. And during that time, we would have moved them every single week. The participants came in, they had their levels checked, they had their weight checked. They were asked about any issues, any effects, and they were able to contact me via their cell phone should they have any problems, and I hardly got any calls. So they were very happy. And in fact, when that period had ended with the shakes, because as strange as it sounds, just living on shakes for 8 weeks, they didn't want to go back to eating regular food, right? They had gotten used to it. They felt satisfied even just with having shakes. Most people were not hungry. So they were pretty good. So when that 8-week period had finished, we wanted them to transition back into normal diet. So we wanted them to start eating food again. And so each week they would introduce one meal and reduce their shakes by one bottle per day. So essentially by week one, they were having three shakes and just one meal per day. Week two, two shakes and two meals, etc. And by the fourth week, they would have resumed a normal diet, but a healthier diet, two-thirds of the size that they were eating before. And of course, with much higher fiber, with, you know, their vegetables, incorporating non-starter vegetables and so forth. So in order to do this, of course, we had the guidance of our dietitian, and she consulted with us on, I think I had mentioned the recipes and meal plans for the participants. We also had group sessions, group nutrition counseling sessions. And in addition to that, we had sessions which would allow the participants to, so we wanted to get some data in terms of any facilitators to the program, meaning what helped you along, what made it work for you, or any barriers, meaning the things that were challenging to you or stopped you from achieving what you wanted to achieve during the time that you were on, that you've been on study and making the dietary changes. And interestingly enough, you know, one of the things that made the study successful was the fact that there was very good support. So they needed the one-on-one support, they needed the group sessions. Those were very helpful in terms of them keeping up with the program and maintaining their diet and not cheating and not having a cookie. Because those things, as simple as they were, like, you know, 1 week somebody would weigh in and not lose a pound, and they're like, but I did everything I was supposed to do. And I was like, are you sure? You know, they said, but I had one cookie. I had two cookies one day. And that was yesterday. And that actually stopped them from actually losing weight for that week. So, you know, the fact that they had intricate support, you know, people to call on, or that they had to be accountable with, was a big part of the success of the program.
Excellent.
And the barriers, just to mention this last point, would have been things like, you know, Bajans, as you said, we love to socialize around food and drinks. So having family functions, special occasions, Easter, Christmas, you know, those were challenging times for the participants. And we recognize them to be, you know, a challenge. And also the fact that culturally, having meat on your bones in the Caribbean is considered to be very attractive.
Yes.
You start to lose weight and people are going to ask, well, what's wrong with you? You don't look good. Don't lose no more weight, you know. So being obese is a cultural norm for us in the Caribbean, unfortunately. So those are some of the things.
Right. So Dr. Binder is still right, just making sure you're still with us. So those were some of the barriers. And I can relate. I remember when I was pregnant, it's not the same thing, but I couldn't eat a lot and I would have to drink those shakes to hold me over. And I remember watching with tears in my eyes as my family ate cocoa. And I know it dare not touch it. So I know it is hard when you are on a more restricted diet, whether it be for health or whether it be for something else, and your family functions occurring. Now, what I want our guests to understand is don't go and try this on your own. I don't want you to sit down here and say, well, you know, Dr. Bino said that if I drink 3 glucernas a day and eat some cucumbers, that I can reverse my diabetes on my own. I want it to be clear that this was done with support. This was done as a program and it was medically supervised. That's really, really important. Doing these things on your own can be very, very dangerous. This was medically supervised. So I just want to put that out there. Craig, can we have a caller?
No, please.
Okay, good. So I just want to put that out there because you're starting with a very restricted low-calorie diet and then you're trying to pivot to a more normal diet. And I think this is a good point, Stacia, Ms. Whitaker, that we can bring you in. Because Stacia was not a part of this original study, but she was a part of another study that was done, or rather that was published in 2017, where this type of approach, a similar type of approach, was taken into the churches. So they took it into faith-based organizations to see if it would work at a community level. And Stacia would have played a role as a nutritionist assisting in that project. Stacia, again, welcome to the program. We are anxious to hear your voice. Can you tell us a little bit about what your role in that research project would have looked like?
Yes. Hi, Kia. Yes. My role was kind of like what Dr. Bino talked about, the transitioning, you know, helping participants to transition back to a more healthy diet, to maintain a healthy diet after less than a thousand calorie type of meal plan. And what that entailed was more practical hands-on. So we met at the churches at least once a week, and we had some real tasty recipes. We showed participants how to prepare their low calorie meals, what their plate ought to look like. You want to start with a 9-inch plate more often. You want to make half that plate at least non-starchy vegetables. So by that time, a lot of participants were actually interested in having those vegetables, loading the plate more with vegetables. So we found a lot of fun recipes, tasty recipes, because oftentimes people think vegetables are going to be boring, it's going to be bland. They don't see a wide scope of what you can do with vegetables. But we had tons of type of recipes using all types of vegetables, and we tried to make them as much as seasonal as possible. And then we also would have showed more of a low carb again option on that plate. So for instance, we would have used, even at one point we kind of substituted rice to use at that time. We tried cauliflower rice. We did a recipe using cauliflower rice at the time, and everybody loved it. It was simple, it was quick. And I think when it comes to helping people to eat healthily, you got to, because people are so busy, you know, oftentimes you really got to connect with them and show them that, you know, getting in the kitchen, preparing a healthy meal doesn't have to be laborsome. You know, it doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be a whole long list of ingredients either. So a lot of what we tried to do was to find recipes that was easy, in some cases affordable. For most part, we wanted them to be affordable, easily accessible, tasty, and really quick to prepare. So that is what we looked at when we went into the churches and we worked with the participants. And week after week, they were just on point in looking to see what else they can do, what new skills, what new recipes they were going to try, how we was going to make those recipes, especially using more plant-based and using more non-starchy vegetables, you can imagine you still want the flavor. So we tend to use more natural herbs and seasonings to bring out the flavors, or onions or garlic, those type of things. They were very colorful and tasty recipes.
Right. That sounds amazing. Yeah. And I think that your role is extremely important, Stacia, because we cannot live on shakes, right? At the end of the day, that might help us to break out of certain food habits, and it might help us to lose the weight quickly. But then, like both yourself and Dr. Bynoe would have said, it's important to transition then to a balanced and a healthier diet, so to speak. I want to remind our listeners at this point, please feel free to contribute to the program, whether it be a question or a comment. You can call us at 434-1790. Again, that number is 434-1790. Or you can WhatsApp your messages to 266-4862, 266-4862. If you have joined us after the introductory comments, we are discussing diabetes remission. And we have two wonderful guests with us, Dr. Karen Bynoe and Ms. Stacia Whitaker, who both would have been involved at some level with diabetes remission studies in Barbados. So one thing that I wanted to ask Stacia, you mentioned plant-based, and I believe Dr. Bynoe would have mentioned plant-based as well, because the initial 8 weeks of the study, you weren't allowed to use meat, obviously. So when you transitioned then into a more balanced diet, did this include any animal sources of protein, or was it mainly plant-based?
Yeah, we would have allowed, participants were able, because we were still trying to get a balance where other food groups can now be a part of their daily meal plan. But mind you, we advocating lean meats. So you're taking the fat off, you're using healthy methods of preparation and cooking, because we're still looking at managing that weight loss. You know, again, as Dr. Bynoe would say, once you can really address the weight management issue in diabetes, you will see enormous results in blood sugar control and hence remission. So the whole aim entirely was to make sure that the plate was still a healthy plate. So lean proteins, whether it was fish or poultry, or even if it was meats, red meats, and well, not basically red meats, but we wanted more lean meats. And hence we kind of advocated those lean meats, smaller portions. It all come back down again to portion and sizes and individual. You know, no two meal plans will be the same. They're going to be different dislikes and likes and preferences, etc. But the whole aim was really keeping within a certain calorie range per individual.
Dr. Lewis, please forgive me for interrupting your little discussion with our good guest, Madam Whitaker. But the reason why I'm interrupting you is I was just on the telephone line trying my best to encourage one of your callers to have a chat with you and the good doctor. But she said, no, please, you can do it for me. But because I have a shallow brain, I'm going to try to tell you what she said, and then we can get back to Madam Whitaker. She's asked me to ask you, and the good doctor, Dr. Bynoe, she said about 9 months ago she was diagnosed as a diabetic, but since then her readings has been in the range of 5.6, 5.8 consistently. And she's wondering if that is a good indication to ask her doctor to take her off the one metformin pill she is currently taking. Now, I hope I represented her well, because as succinct as she was when she was talking to me, she would not dare come and speak with you live. So it's over to you. Can you assist her with that query, please? And then we'll get back to Madam Whitaker. And again, I do apologize for interrupting.
That's all right. It's a worthy interruption to the little radio show. That's all right.
Very much so. But she's very clear on the telephone, though. I can tell you that for a fact.
Dr. Bynoe, I'm going to field that question to you.
Okay, sure. No problem. So it sounds like her glucose levels are pretty good, but it is most likely because the metformin, the medication, is actually doing the work that it's supposed to do. So I can't say that it is a good indicator. That is definitely a discussion that she can have with her doctor, so that her doctor can also look at her HbA1c levels to see if the level of control for her, or the targets or the aim, because it's definitely individualized. So it really depends on if she has any other conditions along with the diabetes and so on, and how old she is and whatnot. So it may be the medication doing a really good job, and not necessarily that your diabetes has gone into remission, because if it is the medication that's working and you come off of it, certainly your blood sugar levels will go back up. But if you're taking the medication, if you were taking the medication and you had lost like a lot of weight and your blood sugar levels were falling really low and so forth, then, you know, that would merit a more urgent discussion with your doctor to see if your medication needed to be adjusted in light of the fact that, you know, there are changes going on in your body to help to control the diabetes on its own.
I think that's an excellent answer. And that's a question we get asked a lot, actually. You know, doc, I'm doing pretty well on this medication. Can I come off of it, right? And I think the response is, it's very appropriate that the medication oftentimes is assisting in that. And one of the things that the caller said, diagnosed with diabetes 9 months ago, Dr. Bino, as it relates to diabetes remission, is there a particular subset of persons who this is more suitable for? Because you did outline that within the study, you would have only used persons who were diagnosed 6 years or less. So if persons are interested in diabetes remission, who are, what's the real criteria that is more likely for them to, for it to be effective then for patients?
All right, so yes, definitely a pretty early diagnosis. Also, if you have a body mass index of 27 or greater, so meaning you do have to be overweight at minimum, or obese for it to really work as well as it should, because of the, as we explained in terms of the mechanism, the method by which it works. Persons who are on oral medication, so once they're on tablets, and if they don't have major complications like kidney complications, if they have, you know, if they have mobility issues or strokes and so on, we don't recommend it. We also don't recommend it while persons are on insulin, or if people have been recently hospitalized for complications of diabetes. And one of the reasons for that is,
I think that we have lost Dr. Bino. I think we've lost her just for a minute. So while Dr. Bino is logging back in, Stacia, Ms. Whitaker, there's something that I really wanted to ask you. I know that we would have discussed healthy diets and the importance of a healthy diet in managing diabetes long term, but there's some diets out there that we hear about quite often. It's intermittent fasting, keto, you know, all of these trendy diets. We have Dr. Bino back. She's coming back with us. But I just wanted to get a feeling from you. I wanted to get a feeling from you as to whether or not you would recommend these diets for diabetics. Do you think that they're an effective way of managing their diabetes?
Well, most of these diets here are known as fad diets, and a fad diet is oftentimes a diet that is popularized by celebrities or models. They're short term. Yes, they can have some effect, but they're short term, and hence they can, persons after having that immediate effect, because they're oftentimes promised an immediate effect, and you oftentimes do get that immediate effect, whether it's weight loss or, you know, blood sugars, but they're oftentimes weight loss oriented type diets. So for the diabetic, I would not advise a diabetic to get up one day and decide they're going to go on an intermittent fasting diet or a keto diet. There is no scientific research. The science behind it hasn't been long enough. It's been very short term to say whether there would be effect or what type of effect. So hence, you wouldn't want to advise a diabetic. However, I noticed in Australia, diabetes organization in Australia, they do support things like the intermittent fasting with the, obviously, with the help and the guidance of a doctor or a dietitian. So in that regards, if someone had to come to their doctor or dietitian asking about these type of diets, again, it's individualized. It depends on where they are at in their treatment, and whether maybe that profession at that time, that professional at that time, believes that maybe this is an option for them. But again, in general, I would not say to start those type of diets. You want to really, even when we look at diabetes reversal, we want lifestyle, we want long term, right? Like Dr. Bino said, you know, is remission. So hence, if you stop, you're gonna start to see those blood sugars going way back up. And like I was trying to say even before, again, when we talked about transitioning, we're looking at controlling sodium, we're looking at cholesterol, because mind you, I have a colleague that always say heavy D's on the boys. So you got diabetes and you got high blood pressure, you often see high cholesterol and all these other options in addition to obesity. So it's really eating healthily in general, watching your sodium, watching cholesterol, having those lean meats, getting more of your whole grains, and most importantly, looking at portion control. I like to sub portion control more than calories, because I think people can connect a little bit more to portions. Let's talk more about portions. What's a portion for you, or what's the adequate portion? So yes, I try to tiptoe around those fads, because again, they can provide some measure of results, but it's not long-term. And it can also have some side effects, even for diabetics, especially when we talk about intermittent fasting. You don't want to have episodes of hypo, which as we know can also be very dangerous, as much as hyperglycemia effects. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, like you said, it's very important, whatever you're doing, that you be medically supervised, you know, then trying to go on a fat diet on your own. There is a role that you would have said for maybe keto. There is a role maybe for intermittent fasting, but that has to be determined by a medical profession such as yourself. You know, whether this will work well for that particular patient.
For that individual, yes, correct. Yeah.
I agree. Dr. Bino, you're back with us.
And Dr. Lewis, before you engage her, I have some work for her here. It's good that she's back with us, because a WhatsApper is asking, what is your view on the use of bile acids in the treatment and prevention of type 2 diabetes? You're still muted, Dr. Bino. Ah, there you go.
Yes, I'm using a different device now, so I hope that this will be much better.
Yes, we can hear you.
Right. Okay. The question was the use of bile acid sequestrants for the treatment and prevention of diabetes. Is that what they asked?
Yes. Treatment.
Is that what the caller was asking?
Yes, the treatment and prevention of type 2 diabetes, correct.
To be honest, I go very evidence-based in terms of management. I am aware that some of those drugs can affect or assist with weight loss or weight management, I should say. However, specific drug use, and in fact, during the study, that was one of the exclusion criteria, that if you were actually using weight loss pills or weight management pills, that you were excluded from the study. But that's not to say that other weight management or weight loss methods would not be successful. But in terms of management of diabetes, we go first with lifestyle modifications, so diet and exercise. And then if that is not successful for you in your diabetes management, we go on to introduce different types of drugs that have been shown to reduce your blood sugar in a controlled
manner without causing any major complications. And I have to say, again, it's individualized, the management, which drugs are used, which drugs you start on. There's several drugs that can be used for diabetes management. I don't necessarily use that for management of diabetes in my patients personally. I tend to stick with the more, your metformin. People are familiar with drugs like glipizide MR, nitinmicron, and so on. There are more modern newer drugs that have been also shown to provide additional benefits, not only just managing diabetes, but in reducing your cardiovascular risk, your risk for heart attacks, kidney disease, or worsening kidney disease, and so forth. So I think those drugs may be a little bit more appropriate depending on the individual.
All right, thank you. I hope the WhatsApper was listening. Dr. Lewis?
Yes, so Dr. Pino, I'm back at you because it's a point that Stacey would have raised that I wanted to, she was talking a lot about you want to be able to sustain the change. And so my question for you, as it relates to the diabetes reversal program that you would have done and then the transition back to a normal diet, how long are these changes sustained? Is this something if somebody goes into remission and they are cautious to, you know, follow up with a healthy diet, what are the chances? What has the research shown internationally or even locally in terms of people maintaining that status of remission a year, 2 years, 5 years down the line? Is there anything that we can look at to say, yes, this works?
Oh, yes, for sure. So about 37% of people up to a year later have been shown to maintain their remission status as internationally. I believe that was with the direct trial. And here in Barbados, our numbers were... our numbers were similar in that most people who were... who fell into the category of most of those people were actually still off of their diabetes medication and controlled on just diet and exercise. So the evidence is there as long as you don't gain weight. People did gain back some weight as expected. So once you transition from the very low calorie diet back to food, there's an expectation that you will gain some weight. But the key is to avoid additional weight gain or to be able to maintain or even lose more weight with your change in your lifestyle. So a year later, there was... one third of persons were still in remission and doing pretty well. And in fact, I would say we are about 7 years after the study. I think we're about 7 years. It's about 7 years now. And I still see participants who tell me that they have not gone back on medication for their diabetes. And that's that is fantastic. Remarkable.
That is so, remarkable. 7 years later.
Yeah, I think also there's some research that some persons can be off as much as 25 years. I think even Dr. Braffitt would share with you a person that she would have had here on the island that can attest that he has been, been able to keep his diabetes in remission for as long as much as over 20 years. So it's worth it, it's really worth it. Yeah.
Yes, I know that person as well. So yes, definitely. Yes.
It's encouraging that there are examples out there and not just internationally, like we said, locally, because oftentimes we think our environment is not supportive enough. We hear, the complaints about healthy food being too expensive and those kind of things, and that can be prohibitive. But I want to pivot now to Stacia. Stacia is excellent at helping persons to eat well on a budget. And Stacia, I want you to give our listeners who might be diabetic or just persons who want to eat healthily, can you give us some tips about eating well on a budget? Because I think that in this present climate where things are difficult for many people, In terms of the economic situation, this is something that we can't close our eyes to. So, Stacey, can you give our guests some tips in terms of how they can eat well on a budget?
Yeah, certainly, Kia. One of my mantra is to just tell people to eat in season, especially when it comes to eating plant-based. If you're going to have your vegetables, purchase those that are in season, that are plentiful. We would say plentiful. So I tell people if okra is plentiful this week, then have okra, make kookoo, stir fry it, steam it, boil, whatever you want to do, grill it, but use your okra. Find also ways of how you can even stock up on your seasonal or plentiful vegetables where you can store them when they're also out of season and might become pricey. So that gives you a way that you can still incorporate vegetables, because oftentimes that's what you hear, oh, it's too pricey to have vegetables. Also stick to your whole grains, such as things like as simple as our cooked porridges, such as oats. Even things like, I try to get clients to try things like brown rice for a change, but oftentimes people are so accustomed to, you know, the white rice, the refined grains, but we get to get into the conversation of why we want to do more whole grains. We talk about liquid calories all the time. People don't realize how much they drink the calories and how this is contributing significantly to weight gain, obesity, and right here in our island. So substituting our sugar sweetened beverages for some plain old water and just making it tasty in your own way, infusing it with local fruits and vegetables, and keeping our portions small. I think if we would try to have smaller portions, having that plate half veg, having just small portions of our starchy foods and small portions of our meats. We talk about portions, using our kids' hand as a way to guide us, and using our own palm of our hands to guide us when it comes to things like meat. We know meat could be the most priciest food on our plate. And if we come to look at portions, we will see that we can really cut our budget significantly down.
Agree. I still say, yeah, you don't have to have meat all the time. One of the things that I tell my patients, you're going through a rough time. I have done it before. Have two meatless days. So if you are doing, for example, you want to do a shepherd's pie, you don't need to add beef in there. You can put some lentils in there instead.
Absolutely, right? Kia. Absolutely.
And you don't have to have the full load of cheese and everything. And you might want to substitute something else. So it's about finding healthier alternatives. You know, you may not be able to do something strict, but it's about finding healthier alternatives. So that you can pivot. You feel like have, you say, well, I want to have like a burger. You don't have to buy beef and make it. You can make a lentil burger and have that with a salad. And that's going to be a lot cheaper than buying the beef burgers from the supermarket. Not only is it cheaper, but it's healthier. And the point you made about water, we can't say that enough. No, you have to pay a water bill anyway. You might as well use what's coming up with the pipe instead of running up, you know, using all your money to buy these sweetened beverages.
Another thing that I know our time is running out, but even we're eating out so much. It's so costly to eat out. When you compare spending maybe $25 on a meal compared to that same $25 on a meal that you can cook at home, it's going to go further. You know, a couple of potatoes, some vegetables that are in season, whether it's okras and some cucumber, and maybe a few fish or some chicken, or like you said, just some peas and make a nice curry. And I bet you that can feed or go further. Or make some cuckoo. You know, it can go further than buying fast food all the time. You know, I know some people will still want to treat, quote unquote, themselves with some sort of fast food, but it doesn't have to be daily or 3 and 4 times a week. Because we know oftentimes these types of food are going to be high in salt, high in fat, and they're going to come with some measure of some kind of sugar, especially if they're served with a sugar sweetened beverage.
Agree. I want to point out to our listeners, we've been talking a lot about diabetes remission. I want to say that the major points that have been coming home are the importance of reducing the issue of obesity within our country, in order to help people to reduce their risk of developing diabetes, but also if you're diabetic, helping you to manage. I want to give you some really quick statistics. The last statistics we have for overweight and obesity in Barbados, 75% of our ladies are either overweight or obese. 43% of them are obese. 58% of our men overweight or obese. 23% are actually obese. Those are major statistics. When we look at our children, we're looking at 1 in 3, almost 30%. So we cannot leave this program without saying that, you know, if you want a healthier lifestyle, we have to look at ways of tackling the obesity issue in our country. And one of the biggest, if not the biggest issue associated with obesity is what we are putting in our bodies, our diets, right? So we have genetics and all those things that we cannot control. But one of the biggest modifiable factors and things that we can control would be our diets. Now, we're coming upon to the end of the program. I want to give...
Excuse me, Doc. Sure. Before you run away with your guests, just this last WhatsApp here, a little bit lengthy, but yeah, sure. You know, I thought I'd just slip it in here. It says, good evening. What I would like to see is a national assistance program similar to the studies you are highlighting. The studies help provide you with info, but they do not help us with the wider population in a tangible way, similar to the people in the studies. We need one-on-one support too. I have very little spare time and really would love some support, but do not know where to go for support. All the info is fine, but where can I go for that support? And then it's an issue of cost. Why doesn't government give some concessions on things like shakes, protein powders? Why can't we get a buyer's card where diabetes can get discounts on based on having verified proof of their diabetes? And then lifestyle counseling in helping people deal with change in their lifestyles. I really would like some help, but really don't know where to go to get effective lifestyle change that I can afford. What say you before you go, Doc?
Dr. Bino, I'm going to throw that one at you. And one of the things I want you to kind of follow, not just what the listener would have made a number of good points, but I wanted to ask if the program that you described is something that can be rolled out in clinics, in private clinics, if it is something that we would be able to replicate in private clinics within the island, so that like the listener would have said, persons can get access to a program like this.
Yes, and I agree with you, Dr. Lewis, that those are excellent points from the listener. And that was the whole point of the study, to be able to determine if it could be replicated within our setting, in our healthcare setting, in the polyclinics, private care, etc. And the answer is yes. And I think there has been a follow-on study to the initial study, a BDRS part two, reversal study or mission study part two, where now they're looking at, and I believe there have been some developments in terms of pushing it forward to make options available for persons in the public healthcare system. Aside from that, there is the Diabetes Association of Barbados, which lends excellent support to persons with diabetes. That is one avenue, as well as the Diabetes Foundation, the Diabetes Center in Warrens. They are a holistic diabetes healthcare facility with excellent support, dietitian, diabetes specialist, nurse, doctors, podiatrists, etc. And some persons from the polyclinic, as we know, there are also nutritionists and so forth available within the polyclinic system. So I think given some time, it would become, I'm hoping that this option would become more widely available to the public in Barbados. But apart from that, the places that I mentioned, you could touch base with them and find out in terms of the services that they have available. And in addition to that, you can speak to your GP or your doctor, your whoever is managing your diabetes, to find out where they can channel you for assistance with support. Because many times, you know, your doctor may be too busy to spend a lot of time with you discussing a lot of the nitty-gritty. So yes, those are some options available.
All right. Thank you kindly. And this last one says, with reference to Madam Whitaker, this last one says, some persons can use all kinds of peas to make stews. It will save money as well. So I guess that's another tip there for you. All right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right here. Dr. Lewis, your due, please, as we wrap up.
Yeah, so I just want to thank both Ms. Stacey Whitaker and Dr. Karen Bino. I want to thank you so much for being with us. I think you have given us a lot of food for thought, and this is hopefully low-calorie food that will not cause fat around our organs. So you've given us a lot to think about this evening, and I want to thank our listeners as always. We really do enjoy bringing this program to you, and I think I'm hopeful that you've taken away something that will help you to make healthier decisions and maybe even facilitate a discussion with your doctors. As always, we want to thank Greg Still for your support and StarCom Network for this partnership with the Barbados Association of Medical Practitioners. I wish you a wonderful week up ahead. Remember, make good decisions for a better life. Good evening, everyone.
All right. Thank you kindly. That was the latest in the installments of episodes for the Better Health Radio Show. Your host this evening was Dr. Kia Lewis, and her professionals this evening as her guests were Dr. Karen Bino and Stacia Whitaker. We want to thank them both. Thank you both, ladies, for taking time out to help us with our program this evening. Until we meet again, you have a wonderful evening. And next week, Dr. Lewis, is it you or is it...
We'll let you know.
Usually it's either her or Dr. Dana Grandison, so I was waiting for her.
But okay. Yes, one of the two of us.
Come next week, yes. We'll find out. All right. Thank you so kindly, Dr. Lewis. Yes. Ladies, have a wonderful evening and take care. All right. You've been listening to the Better Health Radio Show.
Thank you. Good night.
You're welcome. Take care.